Male nurses make their mark. Early nursing schools paving the way. And studies on team approaches to patient care. Plus, we're going to take a look at bipolar disorders. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'm here with the weekly program for you by nurses like you, trying to put information out there and refresh our knowledge, build up our knowledge, getting an understanding of nursing in the news and how we are being portrayed and what we can do to extend better nursing care to our patients, which is really what we're all about. I especially want to extend a special welcome to any brand new listeners out there. I know there's a bunch of you. Go ahead and make sure you head over to nursingshow.com. There are articles posted there about other items in nursing news throughout the week, as well as the show notes for each and every episode. The episodes come out on Friday every week. And in those show notes are links to any of the news items discussed, and also always additional resource links for the interviews or tips that are presented that week. You know, we can present a short amount of information in 10 or 15 minutes here on The Nursing Show in the tip segment, but there is always a lot more to learn and follow up on. So I always make sure I provide you high quality, credible links to additional information on whatever medical topic is being covered, because really, I can give you short information here, but it's your job to figure out how that applies to your own scope of practice and nursing care. And the best way to do that is to follow up on the additional information and really gain a deeper knowledge of what the subject matter is. I got some email in, and I thought I'd share this one back with you. Last week, I had covered an article on changes in nursing careers and some of the new trends that are being seen with people coming into nursing midlife in a second career. Got an email in from listener Jim, a brand new nurse, recently passed the NCLEX just after his 49th birthday. So first of all, congratulations on passing your NCLEX exam, Jim, and welcome to your career as a nurse. Jim was working previously as a union carpenter. He had a bachelor's degree in liberal arts. He was previously also a member of the military, and for several reasons moved into nursing as a second career, and talks about that in his email, basically saying that he couldn't be working construction anymore as he was getting older, and we all know what happens with that. Those of you that are young nurses, you'll figure it out. But Jim also was mentioning that he really enjoyed the fact that nursing matters and that he had a sense of purpose in his career that he hadn't had since he'd been in the military, and that nursing was offering him, you know, increased opportunities in his career path, increased options for different jobs and workplace options. And so, Jim, I thank you for sending me an email. Of course, for all of you out there, don't forget that you can always send an email in. Our new email address is nursingshow@gmail.com. And you can shoot those emails in, responding to an episode, complaining about something I said in an episode, wanting me to make corrections. We want to make sure that this is a community effort, and I really rely on each and every one of you to help with that. Time to jump on into this week's news, and I'll lead off with a story about men making their mark in the nursing community, and we talked about that. Heck, we had the email that I got from listener Jim about his mid-career change in the nursing field, and you know, there are a lot more men coming into the nursing field, either mid-career, as I did from my EMS field and as a paramedic, and also coming in right out of high school into college programs for nursing. And once always a female profession, nursing, I think, is really become much more attractive to men as they enter the nursing field. And we're seeing that more and more. I know many of you have seen more male nurses coming into the field. This story in this article from Indiana is about two recently graduated student nurses, Joel Ferguson and Corey Sizelove, who graduated in 2009 from nursing school, went to work in a local community hospital, but really became more famous before they graduated as the student nurses who began to make their own music video parodies and talking about issues in nursing, educational videos using existing songs and writing their own lyrics to it. So they did an original version of a song from the cartoon movie Aladdin, the Disney animated film Aladdin, to the tune of A Whole New World, looking at doing catheterization. And what a great way to educate about that. And then they moved forward and now have another video out about hand washing techniques that is called Wash This Way. And that's to the tune of Aerosmith's classic hit, I guess you could say, Walk This Way. And so I actually have a link to that video in the show notes, so you can check that out. If you're, of course, signed up for the Nursing Show newsletter, you'll get the show notes sent to you by email. But you can also find the show notes on the website. And you should just definitely check out the video. Very clever. In fact, I think maybe I'll post it to the Nursing Show site tomorrow, which will be Saturday after the Nursing Show is posted up. I'll post the video as a separate article on the Nursing Show site. I think it really provides an example of good quality use of community and social media in the healthcare profession. A lot of facilities and organizations are very wary of social media and things like YouTube and videos, but clearly there is a benefit when you have a fun video like this that really gets across the thoughts and key ideas about hand washing techniques and proper hand washing habits as medical professionals at all levels. And you could show this to any member of your hospital community, and I think that they would enjoy the video and get the point of the video at the same time. So kudos to these two new nurses, two new male nurses, and maybe I can try to get them here on the show. If any of you know these guys, try to get them in touch with me here at the Nursing Show. Have them send me an email, nursingshow@gmail.com, and maybe I can get them on for an interview segment talking about how they made these videos and what they are looking to do next. It might be a fun option here to have as an extra segment here on the Nursing Show. Moving right along from new trends in nursing, let's go back to old trends in nursing. I found a great article at the Galveston County Daily News website, and it's looking at the first nursing school in Galveston and some of the early trends in nursing. You know, I think nursing is so well established now in many ways that we take for granted the hard work that was put in place by our predecessors in the nursing profession. And this is a great article about how nursing professionalism came to the Galveston area, branching out from a professional nurse that was brought in by a family from New York to care for a sick loved one. And that nurse came down from New York and was shocked to find out that there was no professional nursing training in Galveston. Well, you know, what did she do? She did what all nurses do. She innovated and she went ahead and helped begin the first nursing school in the Galveston area. And I suspect this is a tale that could be told in a lot of communities around the nation as their nursing schools got started from seeds planted from some of the early pioneers in nursing from the East Coast. So I'm interested in your take on this. Take a look at the article. There's a link in the show notes. Really a great look at the history of nursing and gives us some perspective on how far we've come. Finally, I just wanted to draw your attention to an article over at the medicalnewstoday.com site. It's looking at a recent study looking at multidisciplinary care teams in nursing and looking at ways that they can reduce the risk of death in patients in intensive care units. This report from the Archives of Internal Medicine, one of the journals of the American Medical Association journals, really looked at how it was important to have a multidisciplinary care team consisting of, and they include nurses in this, which sometimes these articles don't. They just talk about multidisciplinary care from terms of the different physician specialties, but they are looking here at clinicians in the physician field, as well as including nurses and other healthcare professionals like pharmacists and physical therapy, occupational therapy teams to include themselves in the disciplinary, multidisciplinary approach to patient care. So I just urge you to take a look at this article. I know a lot of us are focusing on this in our facilities as this type of multidisciplinary approach is brought into play if it hasn't already been done. And I just thought it might be a good look at some of the studies and research out there. And, you know, I think this article points out to me that this is a field that is really screaming for a nursing research approach. So if you know of any good articles from the nursing care approach, I'd love to feature them here on the show and talk about them a little bit. So you can send me those links into nursingshow@gmail.com. You can also leave comments directly on the website below the show notes. And I look forward to hearing back from you as always. This week's tip of the week is a look at bipolar disorders as part of our continuing series on care for the behavioral patient. We're going to be covering a couple of different things here for bipolar disorders today, looking at, first of all, the different types of bipolar disorders there are. We'll also discuss some of the key assessment diagnostic markers that we need to look for in our bipolar patients, some of the things that might indicate that they are indeed suffering from bipolar disorder, and also the key interventions, different pharmacotherapies, and we'll look at lab results that are important in bipolar disorders as well. So what are the different types of bipolar disorders? What is bipolar disorder? Well, bipolar disorder is characterized or defined often as just a chronic mood disorder. You know, we all have different moods, and sometimes we're in a bad mood, sometimes we're in a good mood. This is extreme swings in changes in mood that are chronic in nature. They aren't necessarily related to any particular event in our lives. As we've talked about in past episodes on depression, depression is a normal part of life in relation to certain key life events, but depression that extends too long or gets in the way of functioning is not normal. And the same is true for any kind of mood disorder where your extremes become reach the point where they are debilitating. This is because it's chronic. We're talking about lifelong episodes and issues. So it's not just an isolated incident, but we can look at their past history and ask questions about their past history and gain key insights to the fact that this has been going on for a long time. And we'll I have a link in the show notes pointing to a great pediatric resource on bipolar disorders because this can begin very early in life. There are two basic types of bipolar disorders. There's a type 1 bipolar person or bipolar disorder that is characterized primarily by manic episodes, those hyperactive, hyper-focused manic episodes. We'll talk a little bit more about mania later, but manic episodes with at least one major depression episode occurring in their life. So it really is type 1 really focusing on more manic behavior and hypermania than patients and then depression. So the key part of type 1 is manic episodes with depression episodes, maybe only just one featured inside their mood disorder. Type 2 bipolar disorders are actually kind of the reverse of that. It's featured episodes of major depression, and there are periods of what are called hypomania, which is mania, but not really extremely manic. So hypomania may not be debilitating mania. They may still be able to function appropriately. The thing that causes the dysfunction is the major depression episodes associated with it. So these mood swings back and forth, and the swing into a major depression is what is causing the issue for the patient. So what are we talking about with regards to the assessment of these patients? Well, we're looking at mania being defined by the DSM-4, distinct periods of abnormally elevated or irritable mood is considered mania. For hypomanic episodes, they are defining this as at least 4 days. If you have a manic episode, it needs to last for 7 or more days. So these are the kind of defining factors. Also, key parts of mania, and especially not hypomania, but the normal standard mania, would be delusions of grandeur, high self-esteem, sleeplessness because of just this hyperactivity, this need to continue to do. Talkative, they may flit from topic to topic to topic. They're highly distractible, lots of things going on. They will be likely engaging in pleasure-seeking activities, and that could be anything from the obvious to the maybe not so obvious, depending on what the patient's own personal tastes are. Lots of ideas coming forth. They just think they've got the handle on everything. They've got the solution to the world pollution problem. They've figured out how to get around some internet issue. They just get into lots of different things, and it could be they're just throwing these ideas out there. And because of the fact that these ideas are coming during a manic period, they think these ideas are the best thing since sliced bread. So this is where that delusions of grandeur come in. They can solve the world's problems because of the great ideas they're having. So you need to kind of get a sense of what you would see there. Some definitions. We talk about mania. Mania is really an inability to function at work or home based upon these other problems we just talked about, the delusions of grandeur, the distractibility, talkability, sleeplessness, hyper behaviors. They can also have psychotic signs and symptoms where they are hearing voices, they're having delusions of various natures. And so this when someone is manic, they're requiring hospitalization. When they have a period of mania, they are really unable to control themselves. They lose a lot of the barriers socially that keep people from doing certain things, and either whether it's violating social convention or violating the law. A manic person would think that they're doing this for a perfectly good reason, that it's normal, that everyone should be listening to them. Hypomania, a less severe disability. Patients are able to function normally. They're able to go to work. They're able to function. They just have these other things going on, whether it's just thoughts or they become very active. They have sleeplessness, but the sleeplessness does not inflict too much distraction on their ability to function normally in most cases. So they have some level of impairment because they're tired, obviously, but they're still out there, go, go, go. But they don't have the psychotic symptoms that go along with mania. Let's talk about some of the key interventions for dealing with a bipolar patient as a nurse. The first thing you really always need to keep in mind with any behavioral patient is to protect your own safety. You need to be aware of your surroundings. You need to make sure you have a safe way to exit the situation in case the patient becomes agitated or violent. And this is just the case for any behavioral patient, but it's certainly something we need to keep in the forefront of our mind. When you're talking with a bipolar patient, you want to assess their mood for levels of depression or mania. Ask them questions, and remember to use good open-ended questions when you're talking with your patients. We talked about depression disorders a few weeks ago, but you should certainly check that episode out for some things to talk about in depression. With dealing with mania, you want to ask the patient about their sleep habits. You want to ask the patients about what kind of ideas they're having, what have they been doing recently, and assess their speech and their overall demeanor for what you might perceive as delusions of grandeur, distractibility, all of the things we talked about in signs and symptoms earlier. A structured environment is important to bipolar patients with clear rules and boundaries. They are unable to set those boundaries for themselves at times of when they're manic. They are unable to set those boundaries. So those boundaries need to be clear, laid out, and they need to be adhered to. If there is an exception, the manic patient will point it out to you because they've noticed it. You need to make sure that the rules are the rules and you don't bend the rules, you don't change the rules. That structured environment is very important to assist with their recovery. You also need to decrease the amount of sensory stimuli to them. And this may be helping them to be in a quiet place, quiet surroundings, a calming area when they're in a full-blown manic episode while they're getting treatment until they've started to resolve. And so this is very important. Again, they're highly distractible, so you want to reduce the distractions and the sensory input that they're getting so that they can focus on the things you're helping them to learn to heal themselves. And this is very important. You also need to provide them with their needs. You need to provide for their needs on the go. One of the things a nursing instructor, I remember talking about this during my psych rotation, was, you know, that bipolar patient during a manic phase is not going to stop and sit down and eat. So, you know, you can't make them stop and sit down and eat. Even if that's the rule, you're fighting a losing battle. So for this patient, you need to provide them an opportunity to eat on the go. And that might mean getting them a sandwich as opposed to sitting down with a plate. And this is just going to be nursing flexibility. And this doesn't mean that you're breaking the rules, but you are working within the patient's own issues. They just can't sit at a table. They've got too much going on. Their brain's going 100,000 miles an hour, and they can't sit still. And so while you're treating them and they're getting medicated and that medication takes time to take effect, you can help them by providing for their needs as they're constantly moving. Talking about pharmacotherapy that are important for these patients, lithium is probably one of the most common treatments for manic patients, lithium carbonate. This medication is important to monitor carefully lab values for this particular patient, and it's important to understand those lab values. We'll talk about those in a little bit. Also, patients are often treated with anti-epileptic drugs, Depakote, Tegretol, Topamax, Lamictal, and Trileptal. And again, these also, it's important to monitor key lab values, kidney function, and others for levels of the medication in their system. It does take time for many of these medications to take effect. It's sometimes 5 to 7 days. So somebody in the middle of a manic episode that is unable to regulate themselves appropriately, this is why they need hospitalization, is because we need to get the medications back on board. And of course, there are side effects. A bipolar patient is bipolar for life. They can be managed with medications, but they have to take their meds. And so it's really important to impress this upon them and on their family members, talk with them about side effects and profiles, and try to manage those side effects so that they can continue taking their medication. If the side effects are so debilitating or distracting or make them feel so crappy that they aren't going to stay on their meds, then you haven't treated the patient. So we need to not just give them their meds, but we need to provide them the tools they need to manage their side effects to some of these strong medications. Patients may also receive second-generation antipsychotic medications. These are usually used for maintenance of patients with some extreme manic problems and episodes. The antipsychotics commonly used, like Risperidone, Geodon, Zyprexa, Abilify, and Invega. We've talked about antipsychotics in other episodes, so definitely look those up. Also, patients may receive some of the first-generation antipsychotics for acute treatment of the patient's issues, and this might be a haloperidol or some others, just because we need to get them under control during an acute episode. But they would not be used commonly for long-term treatment, mainly because of their extreme side effect profiles and long-term side effects that they have. Some important nursing considerations. Nursing safety is first and paramount. So I say that before, but I think it bears saying again. You want to assess your patients for suicidal and dangerous thoughts. You'll see that this is very similar to what we talked about in the depression segment. It's very important for us to assess their levels of depression and mania. And when you're talking to a manic patient or a depressed patient, you need to assess them for having suicidal thoughts or dangerous or violent thoughts. Make a deal with your patient. Contract for safety is important for your depressed patient. And it also is important to use that as a way to get the rules across to a manic patient, and that contract might be able to hold them under some level of control. Again, use of restraints, counterproductive, and most facilities are moving well away from chemical or physical restraints, except in acute instances and for short periods of time. You want to work closely with the family and help them educate them about the medications, long-term treatment options, and help them become involved in the care of the patient. They'll be the first ones to know when they stop taking their meds. So you need to be well aware of that. And follow up with these patients. You need to make sure that they're staying on their meds. You need to follow up with them. You need to get them into regular counseling programs so that they are just working through this particular disorder. And they can have a very normal and functional life and have a happy family and home life by just staying on their program, but they're going to need assistance to do that from both family members and from their healthcare team. I talked about labs a little bit. I think I'll do that in another segment coming up in the future, talking about the specific medications and labs that are involved there. So look forward to that in a future episode here on The Nursing Show. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind all of you that you can find a lot more information, including links to everything discussed in this and every other episode, over at nursingshow.com. You'll find links to the show notes right there at the top of the page under the show notes link. You can also look back and check out all of the great articles and other information you'll find available at nursingshow.com. If you want to comment on this episode or any other episode, you can, of course, comment on any article at the Nursing Show site. There's a comments link. You can also send us email in. Our new email address is nursingshow@gmail.com, nursingshow@gmail.com. Catch us by email. Send us in your tips, suggestions, links to news items, and yes, corrections, because we want to make sure we have the best possible information here available for you on the Nursing Show. Don't forget, you can also find me on Twitter and Facebook under the handle PodMedic, and you can also find and become a fan of the Nursing Show fan page. You'll get updates, information, and usually early access to the Nursing Show. When I record it, I post the links up there earlier in the week. Time to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show with some PodSafe music, and I'm continuing to strive to find some new music to play. I fall into a rut and play like the favorites that I've found in the past, and so I've been out there actively searching for some new independent musicians and bands, and found this one by a group called The Candy Butchers, and it's called What to Do with Michael. Check out the link in the show notes, and if you'd like, you can purchase it. There's a button right there to take you to iTunes. You know, spend $1.29, pick up this song, and thank these independent artists for sharing their songs with you on podcasts like The Nursing Show. That's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, reminding you to check out The Nursing Show every Friday. I'll be back again next week. And until then, don't forget, folks, to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
now, so